The following special edition episode is brought to you by Advantage Leadership, engaging employees and delighting customers to guarantee bottom line success. Now, let's get on with the show. Welcome to this special edition leadership series, where you will learn the secrets of how today's business leaders construct and lead a business culture that engages both employees and customers and results in organizational growth. And now, here are your hosts, Todd Schnick and Rebecca Staten-Reinstein.
All right, welcome back to the show. This is Business in the Morning, conversations around sales, marketing, innovation, and transformative leadership. And this is a special edition on our business culture series. I'm joined by my friend and colleague, Rebecca Staten-Reinstein. Rebecca, good morning. Welcome. How are you?
I'm fine. Good morning to you, Todd. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm very much looking forward to our conversation today. This lady who's joining us represents a brand that is just the quintessential high luxury, high quality standard brand all around the world. We're going to learn an awful lot.
I'm excited. Let's get going.
All right. Well, we're joined today by Mary Louise Fitzgibbon. She's currently the general manager of the W Fort Lauderdale, and she's past GM of the W Atlanta Buckhead and general manager of the year by the American Hotel and Lodging Association, and a veteran of the Starwood and W Hotel chains. Mary Louise, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you.
Okay, Mary Louise, let's get started. You know, I'm interested in finding out what sparked your interest in the hospitality industry.
You know, Rebecca, it was always just one of those things that just jumped out at me when I was younger, just this whole idea of travel and tourism and hospitality. I was somewhat fascinated by it for years and never really understood that this was actually a career. That piece of it never really registered until, you know, sort of in undergrad, realizing, oh, people do this for a living. This is their actual job. And once I found that out, it was, you know, the rest is history.
Oh, that's fascinating to find to do something you love and people actually pay you to do it. That's great.
Yeah.
You can't beat it. Now, I know that at the W in Atlanta, you saw it from concept to completion in 2008. And in 2009, it was named the Buckhead Business of the Year and a premier destination. How did you accomplish that? Get so much done in such a short time.
I'd like to think it was just really a laser focus on both strategy and results. And I think those two are very closely tied. I think there's organizations that are great at strategy. The leaders and the executives can sit around and create a great plan. And particularly in the hotel space, when you're opening a hotel or you're preparing to open a hotel, it's sort of the easy part is creating the strategic plan. And this is how we're going to do things. And that there's certainly a science to that strategy. But I think it's closely tied to, you know, the actualization of results and, you know, a real solid game plan to get there. And so for me, I think it really was a laser focus on, yes, we're going to have solid strategies. We're going to be a great community partner. We're going to do all these things we set out to do. But then really having an actual, call it on-the-ground game plan for, and this is actually how that's all going to get done, and putting the measurements in place. Basically, the tick marks along the way that would show that, yeah, those great strategies that were developed in a boardroom can actually come to life.
Mary Louise, listening to you explain how you did it, it sounds so easy, right? I mean, you say, all right, hey, if you have a good strategy, you're going to get good results, and that's not necessarily always the case. As you said, there are plenty of organizations that have taken a lot of time to develop a good strategy, but where they fall short is where you succeeded. And as you said, you called it the on-the-ground execution. That's where many organizations fall short. What is some advice to how to move the strategy, which is placed in this lovely leather-bound notebook, but then usually stays on the shelf and is never executed? How do you get to that point?
Yeah, I really think it boils down to leaders have got to balance both of those, and they have to be really aware of both of those. Strategy versus results. And I believe that you have to really separate the two, and you have to, in this day and age, you have to be great at both. You can't be a great strategist that can lead a team, but you can't get results. And conversely, you know, you can't be somebody who's great on the ground, great at execution, but can't do the strategy piece of it. So for me, again, to use the word laser focused, I think you just really have to be aware that Again, that leather-bound plan is essentially nothing if you don't have a full-out plan of attack on the results. And I go back to measurements so much because I'm such a believer in the power of measurements, and we've all heard it a million times, you know, what gets measured gets done, and all of those fun corporate buzzwords. But I'm such a believer in, you know, if you were to look in my office right now, I have, you know, it looks like, you know, NASA, but on paper, you know, of this is how we're doing with this particular metric. And, oh, it's 2% off where it's supposed to be. So what's our game plan? And so to me, it's really critical to just kind of keep your eye on all of those results-oriented things. So again, it doesn't just become an interesting strategy that somebody thought of one day.
So, Mary Louise, could you give us maybe just one example of a strategy and then how you translated it on the ground, what you looked at and to get those kinds of results?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the one that pops in my mind, Rebecca, is really anytime you're opening a hotel, and maybe opening any business for that matter, but particularly in the host health space, there's a certain positioning that needs to happen. You know, where is this hotel going to be positioned in the market? Am I trying to lead the market? Am I trying to follow the market? And that goes with how we set rates and the programming we do and that kind of thing. And so for me, you know, most of the hotels, if not all of them that I've been at, I've been very fortunate to work in this luxury space. So in this particular example, when we were opening, you know, one of the W hotels in Atlanta, you know, we go in with the strategy of we're going to operate in the luxury space. We're going to be the leader in this space, both from a experience perspective that the guests will actually experience and from a revenue perspective, from a, you know, room rate, all of those things. And that's all, again, those are all fine and well, and you create some really complex strategies related to how are you going to position yourself in the market. So then fast forward to results, the hotel doors open, and, you know, all of that is nothing if you can't live up to those things that we've said. So as an on-the-ground example would really be the opening of a luxury hotel. And for me, the programming that goes behind that is critical. And I'll define the word programming as it relates to hotels. Programming is, for me, is really everything that happens in the building. What special events are you going to do? What promotions are you going to have? What are you going to do for your repeat guests that come back every week? You know, at W, kind of the core of who we are is programming. When you stay at any W, there are activities happening all around you. It's sort of like a cruise ship on land. There's something to do all the time at bars and restaurants. And so to me, that's a great example of kind of, okay, the strategy was we're going to position ourselves luxury. The actual on-the-ground action is we're going to fill this building with programming so that the customer says, yes, I agree to that. I agree to those rates, and I'm getting the experience. And then fast forward, the end result to that is the financial gain, the financial results that follow that.
Mary Louise, I'm still thinking about your answer when you were discussing the measurements, and you said something really interesting. I don't know if the audience caught it, but I want to bring it to your attention and ask you about it. But you made some comment. I don't think it was a flippant remark. You said, oh, we're 2% off. What are we going to do about that? And I think there's a lot of organizations that would say, whoa, we're just 2% off? Well, that's pretty good. I think that's the difference between a highly reputable, successful operation versus one that's average. Is that kind of, to use your parlance, laser focus on the numbers and the measurements? I mean, I also worry that you get too wrapped into the smallness of that, and then you can get distracted on the bigger picture. Where do you draw the fine line between saying, hey, figuring out this 2% issue is mission critical to the long-term viability of the brand?
I think the way I look at this is, if you ever look at any of the old reruns of the Ed Sullivan Show, there's a guy that spins plates, and you've probably all seen some version of this, but, you know, the basic concept is there's a guy who's, you know, got a stick and a plate on the top, and he spins that, and while that's going, he starts another one, and, you know, by the end of the segment, he's got 50 plates spinning. And the reason I love that analogy ties in exactly to what you just asked about the 2% is, I believe as leaders, you have to be that guy or that gal spinning the plates. Meaning, I can't focus all my energy on one area because all the other plates will fall. So instead, it really has to be this kind of high level, because as the CEO, as the GM, as the leader, you are the one responsible for all those plates spinning. And you can't be too focused on one because the others will fall. So in the 2% analogy, I think it's critical for me to know which of the quote-unquote plates is 2% down. But that doesn't mean that I can then take my attention off of everything just to focus on that. It simply means that it's on my radar, and my team knows it's on my radar. So a lot of times it's simply a matter of me calling in you know, whatever manager, whatever department head is in charge of that, you know, 2% deficit area, and simply acknowledging the fact that I know this, I saw this, this jumped out. So we can't go 6 months being down 2% because you've got to start working on it now. And now I want to clarify, that doesn't mean, and I think this is a critical piece of leadership, that I'm the one fixing the 2% problem. Sometimes if it's a big enough issue, I'm absolutely involved, but probably more often than not, I'm simply the conduit. I'm simply the one that says, hey guys, we have an issue over here. I need you to look at this. I need you to put a plan together and present that to me next Tuesday. Meanwhile, now I can go look at another plate.
Got it. All right. Mary Louise Fitzgibbon will return after this quick break. We'll be right back.
People know leadership and creating a culture are critical factors for a successful organization. Not every executive can bring these factors to life. Dr. Rebecca Staten-Reinstein, president of Advantage Leadership, works with companies from around the world who want to engage employees and delight customers to guarantee bottom-line success. She has already documented the winning formula for strategic leadership in Success Planning, a how-to guide for strategic planning, and Conventional Wisdom, How Today's Leaders Plan, Perform, and Progress Like the Founding Fathers. To learn more, visit AdvantageLeadership.com. That's AdvantageLeadership.com.
All right, we're back with Mary Louise Fitzgibbon, General Manager of the W Fort Lauderdale.
I want to ask you this next question, but maybe I better preface it by my own experience. The way I met you, of course, is that I came out to the W at Fort Lauderdale for a business meeting. And I arrived at the valet parking and prepared, as usual, to get my keys to the attendant and get my ticket and go inside. I was blown away. First of all, the attendant greeted me like I was a long-lost friend. And then he asked me where I was going in the hotel, what meeting. He told me exactly where to go. And in fact, before he did anything else, he led me inside and made sure that I was headed down the right corridor to get to the meeting. Now, to me, that says a lot about this culture that you've created at the W. And so what I'd like you to just talk about a little bit is how you did that, how you built this culture that creates these extraordinary business results. And you've done it in a fairly short time, once again.
Yeah, thanks for the compliment. That's always great to hear. Anytime anybody can tell me anything good that happens here at the hotel, it's always just, it's a reaffirming that we're doing the right thing. So thank you for that. Yeah, my favorite thing to talk about is culture building. And the reason it's my favorite thing to talk about is, as you mentioned when you're reading my bio, you know, I've had some level of success in the hotel industry. I was fortunate to win the award for General Manager of the Year a couple of years back. And that was important for me, again, because it was sort of a reaffirmation of, hey, we're doing the right things. And when I got that award, it was particularly interesting for me because it was out of all hotel companies. It wasn't just a Starwood Award. It was every hotel chain was represented. And when I was asked after that, there was a little bit of media interest after that about, you know, won this award, you know, why'd you get it kind of thing. I kept coming back to this idea of culture, that it is that I have to sort of owe it all to the building of a great culture. And so, yeah, I'd love to share with you a little bit, you know, high level about that. And to me, it all starts with an understanding of how important culture is. And I teach this a lot to our younger managers, meaning if you start day one on the job and you sit at your desk and you've got your calculator out and you're crunching numbers and you're trying to find the 2% and you're doing all of those, it's going to take you three times as long to get results versus if you instead took those first days, weeks, months, whatever it took, and really focused on building the culture. And it's different everywhere you go. I've walked into hotels where, you know, the place is just a mess from a culture perspective. The hotel might be beautiful. And I've walked into other hotels where, you know, the culture's okay, but we just need to make some tweaks. So one of the things I do as a tactical step anytime I take on a new general manager assignment is I spend the first 2 to 3 weeks meeting with almost every employee that I can. The hotel that I'm at right now, we have over 500 employees. So it's a big task, but it's so critical to me to building a culture, even if those meetings are 5 minutes. And I don't ask a lot of questions. Usually my questions are simply, tell me what you love about working here and tell me what you don't love. I mean, they're pretty basic stuff. And based on those answers, I feel that I am then able to work with my executive team. And I believe I've been able to sort of prove this time and time again, that using the answers to those questions will help us, one, to create a culture, but more importantly, will help us to create the strategies that we need to make the business successful. And we've all heard this before. You know, if you want to know how to improve the business, ask the line level employee, you know, different versions of that. But I'm a real firm believer that my front desk agents know more about what my guests want, what they're looking for, what opportunities I have to drive revenue than I do. And as a CEO, as a GM, you really kind of have to take a step back to take that approach to really acknowledge that there's people in the building that are going to know more about whatever that topic is than you. So that to me is really, in tying up your valet question, it's been a matter of really building that culture from the bottom so that I can go out to that valet attendant, Rebecca, and say, listen, I need you to treat every guest like they're a superstar. And once I've built that relationship with them, because we met when I first started and I'm working on the things you asked me to work on, I find it the whole thing falls in line so much easier than if that particular valet attendant never saw my face. The only time I came out was when valet revenues were down. You wouldn't have gotten that same experience.
Mary Louise, what's harder, to do what you just talked about in terms of investing time and energy and real concern into your employees and then leading that with more of a training and here's how we're going to do things and I want to empower you to do some amazing things versus hiring? If you inherit a rough crew, can you turn them around with that kind of love and attention, or are you better off investing in a much more effective hiring strategy?
You know, maybe I'm overly optimistic, but I rarely find that I need to turn over a whole hotel team. Individuals here and there, yeah. When we've all experienced. There's people that just aren't on the bus, or maybe they're on the bus, but they're not heading in the same direction you are. I mean, that happens, but I find that so infrequent. I find that human beings as a whole are good people, and they want to reach their potential, and they want to feel special, and they want to be understood, and they want to be in control. I mean, some really sort of basic things that human beings want. And I find, again, from a very basic level, that if you meet those needs, if I sit down with one of my accountants and I say, tell me what you need. And they say, gosh, I want to be trained. I want to be developed to move up. And, you know, hey, on my birthday last year, nobody recognized me. Little things, you know, we're not talking about major things. I find that if I can zero in on those things, even the employee that could have been considered the worst, quote unquote, bad egg, whatever, 99% of the time can be turned around. There's something within them that's not being met, some need, and they're acting out in ways that, you know, are not productive. But, you know, it's almost the same, I believe the same rules apply almost in parenting and things like that, of just, you know, you recognize people as human beings and you really work on their potential, they'll show you how great they can be.
Wow, this is terrific. And you talked a little bit about this, but I want to drill down perhaps on it, because I've heard you give your 10 leadership tips, guides, and so forth in a seminar I attended and also out on YouTube. And one of them that kind of surprised me, that isn't on most people's lists, is the whole issue of kindness. Can you expand on that? Because, you know, I know that if we interviewed 20 leaders, kindness wouldn't necessarily make the cut.
Yeah, I get asked about that a lot. Last week, I was talking to a group of executive MBA students at the local university here, and I was kind of giving them my 10 tips, and it happens every time. I get to kindness as being one of the tips, and, you know, it's kind of like blank stares. And I always say, I know this seems like something you would hear more at your church or synagogue, but we're going to throw it out here. And the reason that I'm such a proponent of kindness and leadership is I believe that old school philosophies of leadership taught both men and women that the way to be successful, the way to be the boss, was to, you know, kind of be the tough one in the office and never smile. And, you know, you're there to run the show. And that's just the way it goes. You bang your gavel and you set it so, and off it goes. And I just believe that style of leadership is dead, or it's close to being dead. It's dying. The new leader that's emerging understands that people have lives outside of work. They have complex things happening. And certainly I learn this lesson every day with, you know, our 500 employees that we have here. People are experiencing deaths and divorces and illnesses and all kinds of things. And, you know, again, the old school, I think, leadership philosophy taught us, leave that at the door. And then when you step through the door here, you need to be on, you need to be working. And that's just not true. That's not how we're designed as human beings. if something's going on in my personal life, I can try as hard as I can to leave it at the door, but it's still somewhere deep down. And so I've found that, and the reason I talk so much about kindness now is I truly believe if we just make that mental shift as leaders, and I really, it's something I talk to my managers here a lot about, is just be kind. And a quick example I'll give to illustrate this point is, in a hotel I was at several years ago, we had an employee that was stealing money out of the register. And we have checks and balances in place, and that stuff, you know, inevitably always gets caught. And so we're down in the human resources office, and we're you know, I'm with the manager of this employee. Employee had not walked in yet, and we're talking about it. And the manager's just angry. You know, he's angry because this employee stole, and it was affecting our profits, and blah, 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 blah. And I said to him, I said, just do me a favor. Just in this process, we're still going to let him go. Just be kind. And sure enough, the guy walks in and ends up telling us this horrific story about how, you know, child had cancer and losing their house. I mean, just, you know, horrific kind of stuff. And we ended up doing what we had to do because obviously we can't allow that. We ended up separating employment with him. But I looked at the manager afterwards and I said, aren't you at least glad that we were kind? There was no reason to be unkind. And he looked at me and he said, I'm so glad because I've never tried that approach before. And I love that story because I just think, there's no reason to be that person. There's no reason why you can't be a really successful leader and still make such a great positive impact on your team. I think those two used to be different ends of the spectrum, and now I believe this new emerging leader is tied up. And I'll sort of conclude that thought with one other thing I want to mention for any, you know, female listeners you have out there, is particularly young females coming up in the business. Again, I believe females were sort of taught a long time ago, like, you have to suppress that side of yourself. You have to be stern, and you have to, you know, show maybe more of these predominantly male qualities and show that you, and I believe anymore, it's the exact opposite. It's exactly some of the beautiful things that you bring as a female executive that actually end up making you more successful.
Wow. You know, Rebecca, you forget that everybody that you're leading is battling some type of demon, you know, and all you got to do is treat them with respect and like a human being. And that goes so much farther than taking a whip to them, you know?
Absolutely. And I really appreciate that and that story. Thank you so much, Mary Louise. This was really terrific to get these insights from you.
Yeah, Mary Louise, I hate to say it, we are out of time. Before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you and learn about all the great things you're doing at the W Fort Lauderdale?
Our website is simply wfortlauderdalehotel.com. And we also have, we're on all the social media channels as well. We post a lot of the guest-facing things that we do, but we also post a lot of behind-the-scenes things as well so that you can see some of our community outreach and things like that. But we're here in beautiful Fort Lauderdale and couldn't be happier about it.
All right. Mary Louise Fitzgibbon, the general manager of the W Fort Lauderdale. Mary Louise, it was a real pleasure to have you. Thanks for stopping by and joining us.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right. Well, that wraps this episode. Again, on behalf of our guest, Mary Louise Fitzgibbon, my co-host, Rebecca Staten-Reinstein, I'm Todd Schnick. We'll see you soon.